Blog Talk Radio.
And right here in 1 John chapter 1, the B section of verse 7, it said, the blood of Jesus, God's only Son, cleanses us from all of our sins.
Stop looking and get yours. I said you better stop looking and get yours. Somebody say, I might as well shout, because God has already given me the city.
Maurice, Sister Angela, y'all took me all the way back to church. Good God Almighty. Listen, that made me change a little bit of the narrative tonight, because a revelation just came to me just then. Thank you, Sister Angela and Brother Maurice, for that introduction, because that explains a lot to me. And we're going to expound on that tonight. Thank y'all for tuning in tonight to the Black Liberation Movement Building Power Podcast. I'm going to add that Building Power Pod because we're working on our fifth annual summit that will be coming up September the 16th through the 18th. The 19th. And we're looking forward to a great and spectacular summit. But tonight we're talking on the Black First Liberation Movement Building Power Podcast. Okay? We got a great topic tonight, family. A great topic. because it is of my belief that every one of us at some point or another, regardless of how conscious we are, have had strong interaction with the black church. Yes, strong interaction with the black church. I know I myself, for one, was raised in the church. And Sister Angela and Brother Maurice took me back to church just then. And it explained a lot. But, as always, before we proceed with this powerful, powerful, powerful addition to those who have come before us and laid a foundation for what it is that we're doing right now. So if y'all don't mind, let's go back into the reservoirs of our mind. Let's sit down and take a deep breath and reflect on who we are and why we're here. Let's pay homage to our ancestors. We do this by saying this. O ancestors, in midnight. O ancestors, it is to you who we pay our respect and our honor. O African ancestors, it was you who gave the sciences to the world. You gave mathematics. You gave philosophy. You gave literature. You gave God consciousness to the world. Almighty ancestors, we stand on your shoulders tonight, and we hope to bring, with your help, a powerful, powerful, powerful conversation forth tonight. We want your will, your knowledge, and your power to be manifested through our conversation tonight. Help us to reach out and touch our people in such a way that we'll begin to perform an action that's pleasing to you. Thank you, Almighty Ancestors, for the foundation that you laid for the work that we are doing. We will not fail you, Almighty Ancestors, and we will be your Almighty Ancestors. Thank you. Ashe, Ashe, Asheo, Yebo family. Yes, we got a mighty conversation tonight. And I just want to go back to that intro. That intro took me back to church. And it made me understand something. You see, as I began to grow in knowledge and understanding as an adult, I can reflect back on my years in the black church. And I have very clear memories of things that happened within that church, those churches, in that whole setting, in that whole environment. My mind back to the functionality of what it was that drew us, that kept us there. But the knowledge that I have attained through my studies of who we are and what we are makes me understand even greater. And that's why I feel perfectly qualified tonight to be doing this, to be that I had many times before I've had this conversation. But I feel greatly qualified in disseminating tonight and facilitating this conversation, because when I think back, I can see clearly what it was that kept us. See, I learned through understanding Africans and who we are. We never left that. Through all the diabolical treatment throughout our servitude in the process, in the function of slavery, we still retain in us a little bit of our Africanness. And when I heard the music, when I heard how synchronized the beat is and in church, I understood exactly what that was. I understand now exactly what that was. We call that in our African culture Kundalini. Kundalini. The Kundalini in our African spirit transferred to this religious practice that we began to practice here in the Americas. We began to practice the religion, basically, of white supremacy. But that synchronization, that what we call that unified spirit that we practice in the church would be, that's called Kundalini. But what happens, family, when that Kundalini is infused with white supremacy? So that brings us to our topic tonight. That brings us to this point where we need to discuss in this day and time, and where have we gone wrong? The black church, and where have we gone wrong? Let me start out by saying this. I want to couch this conversation in a list of questions and thought-provoking comments. The number one question is, what is our social diet of religion? What is the social diet that we internalize of religion? What is that? Number two, what has religion done to us as a people? See, we can't think as individuals tonight. We have to think as a collective. Because we did this thing as individuals, we'll have a whole bunch of different debates. Let's think about our people as a whole. Let's not be selfish. Think about our people as a whole. What has religion done to us? Number three, how does religion serve us? Number four, what are the functions of the black church? Now, those are just some questions that we want to look at, and we want to talk tonight about those questions. We want to have a conversation tonight. Those of you who chiming in, make sure that you get a piece of this conversation. Make sure that you talk back to Brother Patrick tonight, because I'm finna touch some people. I'm finna push some buttons, and some buttons that need to be pushed. So let's delve into this conversation. What is our social diet of religion? What is our social diet of religion? Well, Carl G. Woodson said this. Carl G. Woodson said that the primary problem with the Negro is that his education and religious instruction are prescribed to him by his oppressor. Let me say it again. I said that Carter G. Woodson said that the fundamental problem of the Negro is that his educational and religious instruction are prescribed to him by his oppressor. What does that mean? What do we say? Because he most definitely right and exact. He said the fundamental problem of the Negro is that his primary religious and educational instruction was subscribed to him by his oppressor. What's the problem with that? It's a big problem with that. You see, when you're talking about an oppressor, You're not talking about somebody that's operating in your best interest. You're talking about somebody that's operating for your benefit. See? We're talking about somebody when we're talking about an oppressor. We're talking about somebody whose duty primarily is to keep you subjected to their will. That's what an oppressor is. Somebody who keeps you subjected to their will. Okay? So now, if your educational, we're gonna touch that too. But if your educational and religious instructions come to you by way of your oppressor, then what are you doing? What are you doing? You fulfilling the will of your oppressor. Now, to have a conversation about if there's anything that you feel that you don't agree with, or we should have conversations about that, chime in. Call the number, 563-999-3682. Call the number. Let's talk about it. Because we had a critical point in our plight as a people. We in a critical point in our plight as a people. Time to put up or shut up. I have decided personally that I'm going to put it all on the line. That's right. I'm going to put it all on the line. So tonight, you're going to hear some things that you might not agree with. But whatever I say tonight, I'm perfectly prepared to back it up. I'm not saying that I'm right, but whatever I'm saying tonight, it had been weighed in the balance. And I just found it to be something that I'm willing to stick my neck out there on and stand on. Trust that. So like I said, Kazi Woods said that the primary problem of the Negro in America is that his religious and educational instructions are subscribed to him by his oppressor. What have we been doing in these churches? What have we been doing in the black church? I tag Christians. I'm talking about known Christians that I know. You know, right here in my own proximity, here in North Mississippi. I tag Christians so that you can come on. And I'm not trying to challenge you and berate your religion, but we are calling the black church out. Because I got some problems with the black church. And whether we agree with it or not, black people have a problem with the black church and its lack of function and duty to black people. And we're going to find out why. Find out why we function like this. Primarily because of what Carter G. Woodson said. He said, your religion has been subscribed to you by your oppressor. So if the religion is what's getting practiced in the church, then the black church is really not a servant of black people. It's a servant of the oppressor of black people. That's mad. That's just simple mad. If my enemy told me my religion, what it is, how it functions, then I'm not serving the master of my creation, the author of my own truth. When I'm serving and worshiping and preaching and foaming at the mouth and shouting and jumping over benches, I'm not serving my own best interest. My whole concept comes from my oppressor. That's why we have to study. Like your Bible says, study to show thyself approved so that you can understand why we function in the way that we function. So if my oppressor subscribed to me the religion that I believe in, then I'm not worshiping my nature. I'm religiously practicing and worshiping that which has been subscribed to me by my enemy, by my oppressor. Which leads us to, so what has religion basically done to us when we look at it from that premise? What has religion basically done to us when we look at it out, your religion? You didn't create your religion. Well, somebody say, well, the white man didn't either. See, I didn't have that argument. Oh, he didn't? The white man didn't create your religion? He ain't the author of the black church? Prove it. Prove that he's not. You say, who's the author then? Jesus. Oh, for real? Where your Jesus come from? Who crafted that? Who crafted that? John Henry Clark said that the biggest thing missing in the black church is a history lesson. None of the churches that I attended all throughout my life, thing to do with actual history. Never alluded to it. Not one time. I don't remember one lesson on actual history. I don't remember talking about the slave trade. I don't remember talking about the institution of slavery. I don't remember talking about historical accounts and events that happened that could actually lead us chronologically where we can understand factually, incrementally, that we get to a point of understanding religion as we did. Not one conversation. Never seen the preacher have a logical thought as to where was this religion crafted? Were we this type of Christian when we was at home in Africa? Never did I hear the preacher take that position. Avoided history lesson. Avoided actual history as it pertained to our religion. You know why? You know why actual history is avoided when we dealing with the religion that we practice in church? Do we know why actual history is avoided? Let me tell you why. Because we have callers on the line. The reason why actual history is avoided when we dealing with the religion that we believe is because it creates direct contradiction that your religion cannot explain. It's not designed to explain. See, it's crazy for a master and a slave to have the same God. But we can't visit that if we don't visit history. So we leave history out of the church. Pin in right there. We got some callers. Which caller was that? Whichever caller was first, Brother Maurice, put them on.
Hey, what's going on, Brother Patrick?
Yes, sir. My brother, Eric Lyle. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm well, brother. I'm better now because I hear your voice. Yes, sir.
So, Brother Maurice, good to speak with y'all. Y'all touching on a sensitive topic tonight. I hope that some Christians do chime in just to get some conversation on the other side. Like you said, it's never really an antagonistic thing, but they always seem to take it that way. It's always coming from a place of love and understanding, you know, trying to get people to see the dangers of religion and how it's led us the wrong way. Hopefully we can have some type of breakthrough tonight with the conversation and get some understanding. And, you know, I pretty much feel like you do as far as religion is concerned. And one of the main takeaways for me is just that it instilled us with a level of fear based on the teaching that they give in the relationship that we have with God pertaining to the Bible. And I think that's one of the bigger things that we suffer from religion. That's one of the major afflictions is that fear part. So if you can, you can touch on that element of it a little bit. That's pretty much all I got to say on it, man. I appreciate you taking my call.
Yes, sir. Well, you stay on, Brother Eric, because I'm pretty sure it'll be some thought-provoking conversation taking place, and I will touch on what it is that you're talking about. And if you have any more to add to the conversation, just chime back in.
Yes, sir, will do. I'll be right here.
Okay. Thank you, Eric, for chiming in tonight. We have another call. We had another call. Did we not have another caller? Thought we had another caller.
Yes, this is Brother Lorenzo. I was just basically touching in, and basically just get the basis of what the conversation was about. And
yes,
from my understanding, Brother, you most definitely touching the real basis of it. And religion is most definitely what got us confused today. So I'm just gonna continue to listen, Brother. That's all.
Yes, sir. Well, look here, Brother Lorenzo. I appreciate you chiming in. I tag you into this thing every Wednesday. And I'm glad that you got an opportunity to chime in tonight, brother. And we are talking to the Mississippi New Black Panther Party commander, Brother Lorenzo Sims. And I'm most definitely glad to have you on tonight, brother.
Yes, sir, brother.
Yes, sir. Well, you just hang tight on that line right there, brother. And we're going to go ahead on and drop it down, all right?
All right.
Yes, sir, all right. Black power, brother. Hang in there, brother.
Black power.
Go ahead on and drop it. Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes,
now,
sir. Yes, sir.
Let's touch on some of that. Let's touch on some of that. We're going to have a talk tonight. What has this religion done to us, and how does this religion in the black church service us today? Okay? We said that this thing is subscribed to us by our oppressor. And I said that we might be refuted about that. We would be rebuttal concerning that to by zealots that stuck, on a system of belief that diametrically opposed universal law and the natural order of things. And it actually opposes your own liberation. I'm going to say that again. This religion that we've been practicing in the black church actually diametrically opposes your liberation. I can prove that. See, belief is accepting the things you do not know. So when we start to ascertain real history, we coming into contact with facts. Religion is not based on facts. Religion is based on beliefs. What did I just say beliefs is? Beliefs are the acceptance of things you do not know. I believe God is sitting in the sky. Why you say you believe? Why you say you believe it? Because you don't actually know it. But see, we operate on a code of belief. And that's what religion is. It never gives you an absolute. So the white man, who is the author of the religion, accomplishes the black church, gives you a system of belief. But what are the tangibles he gives you? See, watch this. Watch this, everybody that's chiming in. What are the tangibles he give you? I'm talking about the things you can see, touch, feel, and all these different things. See, he give you tangibles because what he did, he basically said, okay, I'm going to show you what God looked like. I'm going to show you what God looked like. But then you got black people who get faced with truth like I faced my mother, with logical thinking, and my pastor. I said, and I'll never forget it, growing up in the projects and the Newtown housing projects in San Antonio, Mississippi, I sit on the counter as my mother cooked, and I said, I said, Mom, I said, God created us. Where did he come from? She almost dropped the spoon. See, that was the logical mind, untampered with mind at that time, untrained, unindoctrinated mind at that time, that was asking a logical question. Okay? A logical question. But that get defused by a belief system that we call religion. It get defused. My mother quickly responded because, see, she's indoctrinated. And she immediately responds in a mannerism that suggests you don't ask that question. You don't question God. See, are you really saying you don't question God, or you don't question the prescription of the white man? See? Because what kind of God would ask you not to be logical? What kind of God would ask you to do that? See, a God, the real understanding of natural universal law wouldn't have you contradict the order. It would not have you contradict the natural order. So if I naturally think something is wrong in the basis, I'm talking about I'm a child. I said, wait a minute, God created us. Where he had to come from? And we still using a pronoun now, because this image is put. I'm talking about a pronoun. He, she, all that pronoun. But ain't nobody seen God. We're trying to get somewhere tonight. We're talking about where we go wrong. We're going to get into the economics and all that. But right now, we're dealing with the base of the belief, where it come from. Let's break it down. We got 2 hours. Let's break it down. So I asked my mom, I said, where God come from? So she couldn't answer that question, because that's a scientific question. That's a mathematical question. I hold some preachers on the line tonight. See, that's not a religious question when you ask, where did God come from? That ain't no religious question. A religious statement in that category would be, I love the Lord. He heard my cry. He pitied every groan. And you never met him. No concrete facts. So I wasn't asking her a religious question. I was asking her a mathematical, scientific question. I said, where did God come from? See how bold we are as children? We challenge religion. But then once we are trained, like my mother at the time was a religious zealot, just like most black people are, she responded in a religious way that suggested you don't question God. Now you done scared me. You see what I'm saying? Now you done scared me. Because I'm looking at God when I'm looking at her. You see what I'm saying? And she telling me, you don't question this idea. You don't question that. So I didn't question it no more. You understand what I'm saying? I did not question it no more. Because my God just told me not to. Because she's under the indoctrination of white supremacy. Let's just be real. So as I grew up and I went through the church and my whole life was dealing with church activity, because my mom kept us in the church. You know, I was the one that's supposed to be the next great preacher in the church. The church didn't want to lose me. You know, I was exemplifying brilliance early, you know, in the Sunday school classes. I was the one putting together Sunday school summaries and doing the summaries. I was doing that, you know. Took another experience for me to come out of that mindset. But that little burning little boy, that little burning idea that I had as a little boy sitting on that kitchen counter and my mother was cooking, it was just lying dormant. It wasn't dead. It wasn't gone nowhere. It just needed to be provoked again. And the experience that I had when I was wrongfully incarcerated brought that dormant idea back to life in me. It brought it back to life in me. And I'm not going to go through the whole experience that I had as a incarcerated, wrongly convicted felon. I'll tell you about what happened when I got out. Because the first thing I wanted to do was approach the church on its functionality. I was ready to challenge my pastor on the function and duty. Now, we're going to have a lot of problems now because I've been reading about this Jesus that I've been trained on as a child. And when I was reading about this Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, I was thoroughly impressed with this Jesus. Watch this. I wanted to be a Jesus. I wanted to be a Jesus. I studied the Bible. Unlike most Christians, don't study shit. You don't study no Bible. Stop lying. You go to church. You indoctrinate. Because you studied that messianic figure in the Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Jesus, and you're supposed to follow, see one pastor following him. That was a big contradiction for me right there. I didn't see a pastor that preached Jesus that was actually following Jesus. I didn't see a pastor that preached Jesus that was actually willing to do what Jesus did. So when I got out, I went straight to the preacher. And I had a conversation with him. Pastor Bell, let me ask you a question before this Wednesday night Bible study starts. I never forget it. I said, Pastor Bell, I said, what color was Jesus? I'm 21 years old at the time, by the way. Might not have been that old. May have been 20. The look on his face of shock and surprise, the element of surprise. I clearly, confident in his response, I clearly caught that. But I sat there and I waited for a response. I'm not going to bail you out. I asked you a simple question. I said, what color was Jesus? He said, like all diffident black pastors, preachers would say, he said, Brother Patrick, color don't matter. I said, wow. I said, Pastor Bill, I said, let me say this. I said, if color don't matter, what I'm going to need you to do is take him down out of our church, talking about that image behind your head when we're sitting here listening to you preach, and this white man is behind your head. And he's supposed to be the Son of God, of the universal God. You say, don't have no color. Well, it's clear to me that the Jesus we talking about is white. That's clear. See how psychotic we are? See how much of a psychosis we have with this? I asked him, I said, what color was Jesus? Color don't matter. Color don't matter. Well, I tell you what, you need to take him down as a white man and put him up as a black man. If color don't matter. Now, that was more shocking to him than me asking him the question for me to say, put him up as a black man. Why? Because he knew color matter. Color matters. Because color matters to our oppressor. Color matters to our oppressor. Go back to my premise statement that Carl G. Wilson said. He said that your primary religious instruction is given to you by your oppressor. So why wouldn't the white man make God white? Since you ain't got enough sense. Because you ain't got enough courage, pride about yourself. We done broke you down to our subject. So we going to give you God. Y'all scared for me to ask a question. My mother was afraid for me to ask a question, but white folk weren't even afraid. They were afraid God was going to kill them for lying, strike them down with some lightning. They weren't afraid that God was going to do something terrible to them for directly lying. See what I'm saying? You know why? I'm going to tell you why. And it goes along with one of our questions. The question is the function of the black church and religion. How does it serve us? Well, how does it serve any people? See, what religion is a political tool. Let me say that again. Religion, in the world scheme of things, is a political apparatus that people pull themselves up on. Religion is the opiate of the people. Listen to what I'm telling y'all. See, the Christian, the white, Judeo-European, needed something to raise the level of their existence in the world up. Religion became a political tool, a political apparatus where they pull themselves up on. So in order to do that, because religion get us high, in order to do that, you make God, you make everything look like you. What did the Arab do with Islam? See, Professor James Small, one of my greatest teachers, when I first heard him in the Hidden Colors documentary number one, that it never left me. He said that you can take all the religions of the world. He said, I can take all the religions of the world and juxtapose them beside African living. What he basically was saying is that all the religions of the world have been drawn out of the periphery of African living. That means the whole world observed us and how we live. We have been here on the planet longer than anybody. Can't nobody give black people a religion. We are the religion. Just how we live is the religion. I'm not talking about us now because, of course, we've been taken out of our natural self, side down, and given a religion that serves our oppressor. Don't serve us. It serves our oppressor. But why did the white man do that? Because it was a tool to pull himself up in the world, make an unknown entity as powerful as the God, the sovereign God of the universe, look like them. To create mythological like them, white boy with chicken wings on their back. Y'all think that shit real? I started to make a post the other day. Black folk don't have angels. We have ancestors. Stop playing with me. Stop playing with me. I see it all over social media. All these chicken ass wings on the back of black folk that done died. I did it for years for people on T-shirts, obituaries. That's Greek mythology. That's Greek mythology. All the great Greek philosophers learned from our African brothers and sisters. But we didn't got turned inside out. So what I'm saying is, how does religion serve in the world scheme of things? It is used to pull people up politically. The Arab, Islam to serve him, to empower him. The white man uses Christianity to serve him, to empower him. White people don't go by no goddamn laws or religion. I mean, or what you think they supposed to go by, thou shalt not kill. Do white people abide by that law? White people don't abide by that law. Thou shalt not steal. How you get here? How we get here? Thy will. See, white man don't abide by that. You abide by that. You try to abide by that. Why the white man dominates. While you bow down to his concocted religion, the version of religion. See, you have to, his concocted version of religion. See, religion is something that you fashion yourself. Figure out where we went wrong. Black church. Religion is something you fashion yourself. I have been on panels and I have brought this argument up. And people are basically pushed into a wall by the facts that I'm presenting them. Because your belief is not going to hold up against facts. And I just know when people get stupid and ignorant and they just say, well, I just believe what I believe. I leave it alone right there. I say, okay. Well, I ain't going to argue that. If you just want to believe what you believe, because it proves to me what religion has actually done to us. It has made us comfortable suffering under white supremacy. The white man plan is brilliant. It's brilliant. He gave you a slave religion with a faggot God that won't punish white people for doing wrong because white people are God in their religion. See, you don't separate the white man from God in his religion. He made himself God in the religion. And you go to church every Sunday worshiping white people. That's why come you can suffer all the social injustices that you suffer under white people. You can suffer the institution of slavery, Jim Crowism, redlining, civil rights, dealing with the civil rights and all these diametric injustices that you serve that we suffer. And you can still say, I love the Lord. Because he heard my cry. You can still say, we love everybody. Because the white man told you, love your enemy. See, connect them dots. Love those who despitefully use you. See? Turn the other cheek. Perfect slave religion. Perfect religion to make you feel comfortable being a slave, being in servitude, being long-suffering so you can suffer all the years of your life as long as you go to heaven. And we're going to deal with that in a minute. So let's just take this caller right now. We got a call on the line. Go ahead, caller.
Peace, family. Peace, Brother Patrick. This is Sister Camila.
Oh, yeah. How you doing, Sister Miller?
I am doing very well. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good, Jessica. I'm good. Yeah.
Excellent.
What you
I
got for us?
Just listening, and I want to say as a person, just to put it simply, who knows better, it's still such an emotional topic. I almost at one point, just listening and, you know, reflecting on different occurrences that have happened in my life dealing with religion, you know, growing up and you know, my parents were married. We were Baptists. Then my mom and dad got divorced. My mom was a Jehovah's Witness. My dad was something else. Then, you know, I joined the Nation of Islam for a while. There's so many religious experiences that have happened.
Right.
And listening to what you said and thinking about it, you know, so where do we go wrong with that? With all those experiences, I can say, we know that religion is a tool for divisiveness. That's number one. We know that. That's why it was created, and it's not of us. We know that. But at the same time, I cannot say that religion never gave me anything good, because some teachings that I learned in the Nation of Islam were good for me then and still good for me. I can't take that away. But all my time in the Christian church, all my time as a Jehovah's Witness, Idiocracy. I got in trouble because I had too many questions, and that's a problem. When you ask too many questions, when you can't follow, you're a problem. You know, you're shunned in so many ways by your own family. Even as a child, you know you're treated differently. You know you're told to shut up a little bit more because you're going to ask too much. And but in school, now get this, when that same child goes to school, typically, they're encouraged to speak out. I'm encouraged to say these things, to do these things, right? And sometimes they have those religious things there, and that continues, goes on and on and on. All that to say this, mm-hmm. that child going to the school, getting a different religious experience, that child at home who's the parent's pet, so to speak, because they do what's said, they love the Lord, they believe in Jesus, they can recite all the prayers, they actually read the scriptures, they, you know, they do everything that they're supposed to do, but that child ends up in a different social class. Whereas a child who, just you know, work with me, that child who went with the religion in the school system, they had a different exposure to religion. So just like as we exist as black people, there are social classes. There are social classes that we speak of. There are some that we don't speak of, that we just know about. That's a us thing, right? So if we're knowing that religion is definitely a tool for divisiveness, then what do you have? Within the black churches, you have so many denominations, and even with that, you got social classes, and we're better than them. We don't go to that church because, people in the community, they go to Mount Zion Episcopal because they have money. The people that go here, they're poor, you know. We do all of this, but we all believe in God. We all believe in Jesus. Nobody follows the principles. A whole bunch of believing, but nobody applying nothing because nobody's learning anything. Everybody's going to church in tradition. We're just sitting there. We're being fed the same thing over and over and over again every Sunday, but we're seeing all week, so to speak, if you believe in it. You're sinning all week, but you feel good because the music, the vibrations, now you're elevated. So you feel great. You're ready for a new week, and you do the same thing. It's like idiocracy. Right. And like you said, what God would want his creations to not have any logic? What does that say about that God? One of my biggest things that I used to, I won't say used to, I still do sometimes, but my thing is I have friends who are pastors, and they say, why do you say I am? And then they say, well, I know why you say it, but why do you say it to yourself? Is it giving so much significance to self? I said, because I am giving significance to self. I'm very, very significant, you know, and getting more into it and going on, and I had one pastor to say, God talked to me, and God told me. I said, God ain't told you to tell me nothing. I tell myself, I said, I talk to God just like you do every day. To myself, in the mirror, through my ancestors, through synchronicities, all day. Yeah. I said, no. Like you said, you asked me why that I am. I said, it's I am, not we are.
Right.
You can't tell me what I told myself. If you understand what I am is, try to come tell me what we said, me and God. No, get on away from me with that. It makes no sense. It makes me emotional when I listen because it's when does it stop?
Yeah.
It doesn't. Because at the root of what? It's divisiveness. We're consumers. So now even within the churches, I'm a higher class than you in this church, or I'm more favored than you because of it never ends. We hate each other so much. We hate ourselves so much. We find even something given to us to tear us apart, we'll find ways within that to tear ourselves apart. Proudly.
Right. Right. Right.
It's just so much.
Thank you. Thank you. And I can feel the emotion that it conjures up in you. I mean, I'm just sitting here listening. And I'm gonna allude to one thing that I wrote down that you alluded to, Sister Camilla, and that was the comparative analysis that I take when you talk about, us being involved throughout our life with, different religions and having parents of different. See, I had a father say that he was non-religious, but he wasn't a churchgoer. You know, I have to say, and that's a lot. That happens a lot in our community where we have fathers that are not churchgoers, but they are religious. And when I think about religion, and when I look at it and package it all up, and I'm thinking about this package that the white man gave us, and it has been generationally passed down. You know, I'm thinking about it in that context. So we have a lot of fathers that are not churchgoers, but they are very religiously indoctrinated. They're not going to go against the religious aspect of what's being predominantly practiced throughout the black community. And then you think about all the different religions that we were bombarded with. But then we came into, and I find this in a lot of experiences with people that I talk to throughout my years, we came into this experience of the Nation of Islam. And I always point to the Nation of Islam with endearment because that was the first organized effort
Absolutely.
That I know that I witnessed that brought a religion. And see, this is where I was trying to get to, because I'm not going to even say that religion is a bad thing. I know it's bad in what it is that we practice in this functionality, in this reality that we're living in. It don't give
right.
us nothing to fight back with. The religion
right.
that we practice gives us nothing to fight back with. So I'm on record to saying, why don't black people create a religion? You know, why don't we create a religion that works for us? That's exactly what I was getting to when I said that the world, on the world scheme, people view religion as a political apparatus to raise themselves up. You know, you're going to give me the opportunity to craft a religion? Okay, that's what the white man said. He's saying, well, I'm going to make me one that basically reflects me as God. So when you're talking to the black preacher who represents that white ideology of God, and you saying, wait a minute, preacher, I'm going to look inside myself for God. When I look in the mirror, I see God. When I see my mama, I see God.
Right.
They got a problem with that. They got a problem with you being that pronounced about what you have come to the conclusion of. So when I had my encounter was with the Nation of Islam. And I have to look back at that, and I have to say, is that religion? What Elijah Muhammad bought, was that religion?
Yeah.
Or was that science? You see what I'm saying? Was that more science than religion? Because he didn't say believe this. What he said and what was taught to him, that the black man is God. Is means equal to. That means, wait a minute, that ain't no belief. Let's go back historically and look at that. You see what I'm saying? And see, I'm telling us, and I'm telling these preachers, you know, you ain't got no historical record that your religion is founded in. You got a belief system that was imposed on you by your oppressors. And you been submissive to that. And you have been loyal to that, too. Very loyal to that. So when a system of science come to us, I never forget it. I was locked up in prison. And the brother came to me. And he left a final call on my bunk. And I knew that was against my religious instruction. And I said, who left this on my bunk? I'm at 1045 Mother Station Road. Mississippi, Shelby Farm. And I'm from Mississippi. And they all clicked up, and I'm like, been told, I just heard all the stories about prison, Sister Miller. You don't take nothing from nobody, you know, because you're going to owe that person. I'm not going to get involved. Who left this on my bunk? That was a final call newspaper. And the brother Muslim back there, he raised his hand. He said, brother, I put that on your bunk. I said, well, you need to come get it. I said, because I don't get down like this. You need to come get it. He said, well, brother, he kindly walked over, and he picked it up. He said, the only reason that I left this on your bunk, he said, because it don't look like you're supposed to be here, young brother. That's what he said. That touched me. That touched me. Because he saw something in me. He saw something in me. What made that man see something in me?
Yeah.
Something in him made him see something in me. He reached out to me. He said, you need to read this. And when I finally got to a point where I said, let me see what these people talking about. Because it ain't like I had not seen the final call. But in the world that I came up in, and the way I was raised, I see it that I don't see. Those people that diametrically opposed to my religion. Not to my people now. Check that. They don't like white people. What they got to do with black people? I'm black. You see what I'm saying? So we automatically trained to not accept our blackness. So the religion that we had digested, that I had digested, made me not want to see reality. So when I'm locked up and I'm looking and I'm searching, this man's spirit touched me the way that he approached me and what he said. He could have said, man, well, let me get my goddamn paper, you coward. You don't want to read
That's
this?
Right.
He could have said that. But what did he say? He said, brother, I left this here because it don't look like you're supposed to be here. He said, I see you reading your Bible all the time. And he said, you would be a surprise how much this right here validates what's in your Bible. That touched me. So I picked the paper up one night. I pick up a book. We will shoot back in here right now that I'm studying for the summit because we have a Kenyele Umoja coming. I want to be on point when he comes. I was flipping the final call from the back to the front. And right there in the back of the paper, it said what the Muslim believe and what the Muslim want. And I started reading what the Muslim want, and they said that they want all incarcerated black men to be released. Until I said, That's me. I'm 19 years old. That's me. I supposed to have been playing basketball at one of these colleges on a scholarship, but I end up in prison. I said, somebody's thinking about me. My church didn't come out to me. They said, you need to pray, Patrick, and we're going to pray. Well, we prayed a long time, and I still ended up. You see where I'm going? So when I started to study under the understanding of Islam, I began to see some things that diametrically opposed, not me, but my religion. And sister, we're going to get back to that because I don't want to have this caller that's waiting on the line. We're going to get to this caller. Hang in there, Sister Miller, and we'll get back to that. I appreciate you every time. Thank you, dear. Caller 5983. Come on through. Caller 5983. Okay, they hung up. Well, if you're still on the line, caller, call back in. I'm sorry, me and Sister Miller got off right there on a little, we kind of went out there, but we still were along the lines of what it is we're dealing with. So let me just go on back to that. But call back, caller. We do want to hear from you. The religion of Islam as taught by Elijah Muhammad. I must say that. As taught by Elijah Muhammad and other brothers that bought us Islam. They gave us the diametrically challenged the system of belief that we had been indoctrinated with. What were they telling us? They said that the black man is God. They, what? I'm God? See, to some Negro, like what Carl G. Wilson was saying, that's out here, that got education, that got a good job in the white man's system, see, he don't want to hear that. He don't want to hear the black man is God and something that died missing because he believed that his prayer was answered when the white man elevated him somewhat in this society. So that Negro, he don't want to hear the black man is God. But who want to hear that the black man is God? Who want to hear that? I wanted to hear it because I have been disenfranchised. I have been broken down by the system, unjust. I was looking for a God. I was looking for help. Who else want to hear it? The black drug addict want to hear it. Who else want to hear that? The black mother that's hopeless and lost. And I heard Elijah Muhammad say that Islam is help to the helpless poor. Did y'all hear what I said? He said that Islam was help to the helpless poor. Now, I'm not religious. I'm not religious, but I understand science. And just like Sister Miller said, it's things that you take out of your religion, out of these religions. You think I don't want to do unto others if you have them do unto me? That's what Christianity is to me. Christianity ain't turn the other cheek and love your enemy. See, that's the shit that has been infused with. I heard Sister Miller say something about Jehovah's Witness. I see these Jehovah's Witness around here. Coming knocking on your door Saturday morning, black and white. But it's clear to me which one's running. They black and white. But it's clear to me which Jehovah's Witness running the kingdom hall. It ain't the black one. You've been socialized a certain way through your religion. I'm ready to deal with anybody on the matter. We sit here and do this podcast, and I'm sitting here talking in a phone. I'd much rather be talking to some people. Some religious so-called scholars or whatever it is, and show you that this shit don't work for black people. That shit don't work. Okay, we got a call. Call it 75335. Come on through.
Hey, Brother Patrick, it's Reverend Hollowell. How you doing?
Yeah. I was calling you, Reverend Hollowell, because I wanted you to be on this call. And guess what? We talk.
Yes, sir.
Peace and blessing, brother.
Peace and blessing. I was trying to get into a Zoom meeting that I got into it, but I couldn't hear him, so I guess they wasn't really talking about much of nothing.
They ain't talking about what we talking about.
Oh,
I can guarantee you that.
Oh, no. Well, I'm going to say this. And I'm not going to be long, but I'm just going to say that.
Yes, sir.
This is like the sister said, it's a very emotional topic, but you can't deal with emotion. You have to deal with facts and, like you said, science. And so I'm pretty much blacklisted from speaking in churches because I practice Christianity, but I'm more of a Godite. If you're familiar, I'm sure you're familiar with Mark of God.
I'm very familiar. Yes, sir.
And he believed in black economic empowerment and all, and did all that through the church, and actually said his God was black. So that's basically the vein that I practice from.
Yes, sir.
As a God, I had a church in Jackson, and I named it Precious Stones Church of the African Nation, and most of my preacher friends thought I had lost my mind. But when I explained to them, and I'm just gonna say this, I've been studying about the African influence on Christianity, and I've done a lot of research, and I found out that this is really now the original Christians. The oldest mm-hmm. Christian church is in Ethiopia mm-hmm. right now. It's not in Rome.
Yes, sir.
So they did was they perverted it and turned it into something that it's not. They whitewashed it.
Yes, sir.
And Marcus God said it. God is black, and so I believe that because I've done my research, and actually. Yes, all the chosen one, the children of Israel that we read about, and the black preachers. I'm kind of jumping around because it's really sad that most of our black preachers, they don't know. And when I tried to go to, when I tried to speak and tell, then they said, "You causing division," And so I just had to shake the dust and keep moving, I'm trying to impart mm-hmm. some knowledge, like you said, the Christianity we practice now in most churches, it is a tool of white supremacy, and that's the bottom line.
Without a doubt.
Because if we serve a worship of God that look like your oppressor, you're still in slavery. So when I was in Jackson, the first thing I did, I put up a picture of a black Jesus. And I talked, from the angle that the children of Israel were black and that the Jews mm-hmm. that were over there now, they were imposters and they could call it anti-Semitic or whatever, but it's the truth. And it's based on
mm-hmm.
black.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through a whole lot of stuff, but basically I told them there was no white people in the Old Testament. All that Old Testament is a history of the black Hebrew Israelites and or the black Jews, original black Jews. So, I taught them that God, Adam and Eve, that the garden was in Africa. And, then we had an understanding because I did my research and I have documentation to not only just saying that, I have documentation to prove, And so one thing that, and I tell this when I wrote my book, I put this in my book, that the person that really, one person that was inspired to me was the Minister Louis Farrakhan, because I was listening to it. I was at a crossroads,
Yes, sir.
Because I was listening to his show one day, and he said, "This Adam and Eve, y'all talk about, that Adam and Eve ain't white." And, I had already been studying about the garden being in Africa anyway. And so I went and got the article, and it was a scientific article. I still have it now. And it showed these were white molecular biologists. They proved that the origin the man was in Africa. And so mm-hmm. I had an answer, mm-hmm. and then I did more research to find out that not only was Adam and Eve black, but everybody in the Bible is practically black. And the only time you get to white, and I'm going to say this, the only time you get to whites in the Old Testament is when black people had been cursed and turned white with leprosy. And see, white is not that's a mutant, you know, that's a anomaly, if you say it's an albino, like, you know, something that's not natural. The original man, he said, Adam and Eve, that Adam and Eve you're talking about, that Adam and Eve is not white. So I went and got that. It's in Newsweek magazine, so they know the truth. I don't have no problem when I teach about black African influence in the Bible. I don't have no problem with white ministers because they've already been taught. And then they can hide it. They know the truth. Like the Pope worships at the shrine of the Black Madonna. I got a picture of the Pope praying, both popes praying at the shrine of the Black Madonna, a black woman holding a baby. So they know. But when it comes to America, that doesn't serve them any purpose. That's why in most black people's homes, in most black churches, you got a white Jesus. And that shouldn't be. That's the first step we need to take down all pictures of white Jesus burn them, because it's not real, you know. And so people, that's just a few ideas I was throwing out, you know. I'm very much I'm of God, right? Because I don't believe, and I go along with on the lines of the Nation of Islam, because I believe that we shouldn't be integrated. We shouldn't be separate. If we're going to survive, we're going to have to be separate, because integration has killed us and it's still killing us, you know. So I think along those terms, race first, because when cops see us, they don't see no Baptist, they don't see no Methodist, they see a black person. And yes, we are God, because it's in the Old Testament. There's a scripture in Psalms, I can't think of it right now. They say that, we're God. And Jesus told them, that's why they killed him, because the Romans killed him. Now, see, people, our preachers just need to be taught. They don't know.
Romans they don't want killed him.
He was crucified. Jesus was lynched, basically, because the Bible says, cursed is he that is on the tree. Jesus was lynched. He was the first black, not the first, but he was lynched because he was on the, they put him on the tree. He wasn't up there with a rope. He was up there with nails, you know. So that's how I see it. So I try to make some sense out of it. I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I just try to make some sense out of what I've been taught. And I did research on it. And I find that this is white. And let me say this, then I'm going to get off the line, but I'm going to keep listening.
Okay.
You hear preachers talking about Paul. Paul this, Paul that, Paul that. Well, most of them don't know that Paul was a black man. And what Paul did, he took Christianity, the original Christianity, took it to whites in Europe and Asia, and he Christianized them. What they did, they learned Christianity, then they whitewashed it and took it back to Africa to colonize it, and then they brought it to America and did the same thing. So that's basically what the oldest church is in Egypt, and the oldest image of Jesus they have in that church with an afro and his black skin. But I cannot. I've been fighting this battle for over 30 years because I don't really have no preacher friend because they think I'm all crazy. So I said, that's fine, but I know the truth. You know, I try to teach people. That's how I like to translate this King James Version of the Bible. But just keep doing what you're doing, you know, peace and blessings, free the land, so and that, all that other
stuff. Yes, sir. Well, listen, Brother Hollowell. Brother Hollowell, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, all right. Listen. I appreciate you calling in. And I appreciate your stance. You know, I appreciate your stance and what it is that you have done in creating the African version of the Bible. And this, listen,
because, you know, white folks, they don't tell them.
Yes, sir. I'm saying,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Just hear me. I can hear you very clearly. And yes, sir. I know you can hear me. I'm just trying to get something to you right now. It was divine synchronicity because I did not contact you. I mean, I called you so that you could be on this line, and didn't talk. But you still end up on the line. I call that divine synchronicity. I call that universal law and order.
Absolutely.
You understand what I'm saying? So I'm just going
to
Yes, sir. So I'm going to let you hang up, and I'm going to touch some points of what it is that you were just saying because we have another call on the line, and I want to get to that call.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for calling in,
Brother Howell. Peace and blessings.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir. Now, let me just touch some things that Brother Howell said. Because it's very relevant to the understanding of what it is we're talking about tonight, because we're really trying to get to the black church and what's going wrong. What's wrong community now? He said that the origin of Christianity, now we're talking about Christianity, the origin of Christianity is in Africa. Now, y'all remember me saying what Professor Small said? He said that he can take every religion on the planet and show you where it had come out of African living, African spiritual system. He can show you that. So it ain't no mistake. Origin of Christianity is in Africa, just like the origin of Islam is in Africa, okay? Just like the origin of Hinduism and everything else that you can name is in Africa. Now, that's history. That's history. So when Brother Hollowell, and I'm glad he called in because he's a great example. So when Brother Hollowell, going under the banner of a preacher, a Christian preacher, approached other preachers with history, guess what happened? Because your religion ain't based on history. Didn't I tell y'all that about an hour ago? Your religion is not based on history. So when Brother Hollowell bring historical facts to craft religion from historical facts, not a religion that's been intercepted by white supremacy and laced like a bad drug, laced, infused, infiltrated with white supremacy, not that. The origin of Christianity historically is African. That means do unto others you have them do unto you. Love your brother. Do not steal from your brother. See, that ain't no fucking religion to us. That's just how we live. Excuse my language. That's how we live. Don't approach your brother's wife. These crocs will rape our mothers. Give us a religion, and then Brother Howell have to struggle with these ham-bone, handkerchief-head-ass niggas that's standing in our pulpit directing our communities backwards, creating puss-ass cowards. They won't fight for nothing. So then when I stand up in front of people, you got people looking at me crazy, sideways. They're like, what you getting, Brother Howell? And your lifetime struggle trying to get your friends as it is. Righteousness, they don't want that. They don't want that. So what the white man do? The Western Hemisphere gave the white man a chance to open up a whole new world. And in order to make himself, who is a minority on this planet, Christianity had to become a tool for him to submerge and subject our God. You can't tell these people they God. You kill every idea of that's in the humanity of those people, and you rear their children on lies. You rear their children on lies. You send missionaries and mercenaries in because you don't believe it, we just kill you. This is history. The black church don't want to hear that. So where did we go wrong? See, I'm ready right now at this time in my life to bring this argument. I don't care. I care more for black people than to not tell the truth. I care more about our children's future than to not tell the truth. So history contradicts religion as we know it. So black preachers and the social system and the black people have become very intolerable. Somebody going to have to be bold enough to organize around truth and stand on that. We that. So that's what we'll be doing. We'll be organizing around truth, and we'll be standing on it. Brother Hotwell, we want to offer you a platform at the Black Liberation, the 5th Annual Black Liberation Building Power Summit. We want you to be there. We want you to bring versions of your African-American Bible. And we're going to give you a platform so that you can disseminate your truths to the family. And we still may have a few philosophical differences, but you said you're a Garvey. Yeah, Garvey was a Christian. Garvey was a Christian. Not this type of Christian, churchgoer, white supremacist that we are. Dr. Murphy said, we ain't got no black churches. We got white churches that black folks convene at every Sunday. That's what Dr. Murphy said. So let's move forward. Did we have another call? Anybody on the line?
Can you hear me? Hello?
Oh, this is Sister Crystal. Sister Crystal,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just wanting to
how
say one thing. Oh, I'm good. How you doing?
I'm well.
I just want to go back to when you were talking about, you know, some of the tenets of Christianity is pray for those who despitefully use you and turn the other cheek.
Right.
So think about that. And we can think about how black folk Christians practice that. And you have to know that this religion is for us to do that to white people, because we don't practice Christianity with one another, if you know, with those, even
mm-hmm.
those who sit right there. Because how many times have we have heard people, black people say that black people had done me worse than any white person could ever have. And if a black person do something to us, we're ready to kill them, literally and figuratively. We don't turn the other cheek with each other. We don't pray for them. You know, every now and then you might have somebody say, well, I'm just going to pray for them. But we don't. And you don't really mean it because you're mad and you're unforgiving and you go on and you ain't going to talk. You're cutting them off. All that. We
mm-hmm.
don't practice
mm-hmm.
it with one another. So that in itself is proof that it's not for us. It's basically for us
mm-hmm.
to keep us oppressed in an oppressive mind state, because the only people we forgiving and turn the other cheek and all this, that, and the other is white folks. We ain't doing that for one another, because if we did, we wouldn't be in the state we in. So
that's right.
You know, just the
that's
whole
right.
practice
that's
of it, you know. And I remember one time, even when I was in the church in my hearing, I remember saying to somebody, well, if God wanted us to do such and such, he wouldn't have given us 5 senses. See, we can hear, we can feel, we can touch, we can smell. So that right there gives us the ability to decipher and make logical decisions based on information. And it's like, what is that supposed to mean?
Mm-hmm.
It means
mm-hmm.
what I said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you need to go to the Bible, da da da. I said, no, I can use my logic and common sense to figure out something. Now, come on,
mm-hmm.
you know. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, just that mindset that we have. And like you said, most of us don't even practice what's in the Bible. Just look at how we practice Christianity. We practice Christianity just like white people, because we don't have any. They give us our moral standards and values. Things that were taboo in the black community back in the day, and now you can do whatever you want. You can say whatever you want. You can wear whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. Nothing is taboo anymore. So, you know, I was just wanted to make that point, because we don't practice Christianity for real, and we certainly don't practice it with one another. And just like Sister Camilla said, the black church is one of the most divisive institutions in the black community. And she was right on point, because I just remember when I was going to church growing up, you had St. Peter, First Baptist, and it was a certain type of people that went to each church, you know. So, yeah.
Totally on point. So, yeah, it's a great discussion. It's a really good discussion, right. You know, and I'm enjoying it. But that's all I wanted.
All right. Most definitely, we always appreciate your commentary and everything. So just hang on the line. I'm sure you will. And I want to make some more points. We got 30 more minutes. So I've basically been dealing with the religious aspect of this conversation. But now let's deal with the black church, like what the titles say, the black church and what has gone wrong. We see how we have digested this religion. So let's walk drive up to today. What do we really have with the black church, with the strongest institution in the black community is the black church? I'm talking about where we the heads now. I know we got schools and different things, but outside of the home, the strongest functioning institution in the black community is the black church. Now, let me say something. Let's put on our critical thinking caps. If the black church serve black people truly, then the black church would be dealing with our reality. It'd be dealing with our realities. But see, Facebook happened to share, and this really what incentivized this conversation tonight. Facebook shared a talk I did at a 100 black men meeting that we had some years ago. And it reshared it today, so I reshared it as well. And I was just thinking about some of the things that I said to that group of black brothers, because I was trying to call these brothers to a duty to start correcting the wrongs in our community and to be men in our community. And it was some preachers, it's some black preachers there. Because how can we call our communal men together and not call the heads of these churches? So I made it my business to bring the preachers in, as many as would come. And I think we ended up getting about 5 or 6 of them there. One of them was pretty much like Dr. Holloway. But the majority of them still immersed into this quandary of what we call it black leadership from the pulpit, and I really wanted to talk to them. And I made some very key points. I asked them, I said, if the black church was functioning in service to black people, then don't you understand that there would be damage to the government of the United States of America, and America would shut down black churches if they were functioning on behalf of the black community? They would seek to shut black churches down, like they seek to shut organizations like the Nation of Islam down, the Nation of Gods and Earth, all of these ideologies that originated from them. But see, why they don't mess with the black church? See, why don't the government mess with the black church? Because the black church don't diametrically oppose them at all. As a matter of fact, Elijah Muhammad said that the black church is the best tool the white man has. The black church is the best tool that the white man has. And I said that day to them preachers. Because your religious instruction doesn't do anything to raise black people up out of what I used to hear in the church all the time, the muck and the miry clay. It does nothing to raise us up out of the muck and the miry clay. Okay? What it does, it makes us comfortable in it. It makes us comfortable in our suffering. That's the majority of what our people. So what is the function of the black church? Where did we go wrong? We can start at a lot of places, but let's talk about this. What about the finance? You see? What about that 10% that you have religiously instructed black people to pay? It don't matter if they poor. It don't matter if they light about to get turned off. It don't matter if they about to be evicted. See, I got family. I got family, and I'm very emotional about this. I got family that will pay that 10% before they pay that light bill and call me to get their light back on. So you mean to tell me that God instructed that? Tell me that God instructed that. That's something right there. I'm going to do some statistics. It is understood factually that in the last 20 years, black people have tithed $125 billion. $125 billion. That's billion, not million, billion. I tell people all the time, you don't understand what a billion is. Let me make you understand what a billion is, 1 billion. 1 billion is 999 million plus one more million. That ain't good enough. That ain't a good enough example. Make a better example. If we change $1 billion into seconds, and we gave $1 billion to a newborn baby, and we told that newborn baby to spend $1 every second, and we gave that newborn baby $1 billion, and we said, spend $1 every second. That baby would be 33 years old before he exhausts that money. That's $1 billion. Trying to give a perspective of what a billion is. I tell people there's a whole lot more space in between a millionaire and a billionaire than it is from the average person to a millionaire. Let me say that again. I'm just trying to put perspective on this this $125 billion. That we've paid in tithe. I said there's a lot more space in between a millionaire and a billionaire than it is between you and I and a millionaire. We closer to being millionaires than a millionaire is to being a billionaire, okay? Just put it like that. Okay, so now we talking about $125 billion that black people have collectively tithed it. So when you tithe, what happens? What happens when you actually tithe? When you have been religiously instructed that you are to give this money to God, the church. Watch this. What actually happened with the money that you say you're giving to God? What actually? I wish we had preachers. We only got Dr. Hollywood. But I wish we had some preachers with the courage. Tell me. What happened with that money? The church ain't got no empowering, building ideas in the black community. The only thing you're going to do is build a wing on the church. That's all you're going to do. You might build a little rick thing over here on the side of the church. But what after that? You get a church bus, but you don't ever go nowhere. You don't perform like the Jesus in the scriptures that went out and dealt with the people. Take missionary out your name. You're not missionaries. You bench warmers. You're not missionaries. You don't go out and see about our people. You scared of them. You don't engage them. You don't raise us up in our community. You don't function like that. So what happens to this 1.2, well, no, not 1.0, nothing, $125 billion? What happens when the Black Liberation Movement can't get a dollar a day out of you? What happens to this money? Well, on Monday, I can track it for you. I can track it for you. That Jesus money, as Dr. Umar Johnson called it, that Jesus money go directly to White Folk Bank. Go back and look at my Facebook page and what I said, because I studied before I had that talk with them preachers. It was 6,700 Black Baptist churches in Mississippi at that time. 6,700 Black Baptist churches. I'm not talking about Episcopal, Methodist, or whatever else denomination, gangs that we call ourselves in these churches. Not talking about that. I said Baptist church. Most of us come from the Baptist segment of Christianity. 700 in Mississippi. So what should that economically should equate to? Should we have poverty amongst Black people? Well, you can't put that all on the church, Brother Pat. Why not? Why not? What other Black organization asks 10% of your money in the name of God? So you mean to tell me that I have to give 10% of my earnings and you don't supposed to affect my life none? You don't supposed to affect my social dynamics none? See, your religion is not designed to uphold white supremacy. You melancholy. You weak. But you take my money. You can religiously give your money and not put nail demand on the strongest institution in the Black community. There's a tool for white folks. I ain't just talking about on a psychological level. Now I'm talking about finance. I'm talking about the dollar, the medium of exchange that governs and navigates our lives in this capitalist society. I'm talking about the tool. I'm talking about money that can make you free or a slave, and it's 10% of that. And don't expect nothing. You don't have no social change. Black people still getting killed in the street. That ain't the church's fault. Why it ain't? Why it ain't. You where God resides, you get 10% of my money. So why it ain't your fault? Why you don't have nothing to do with that? It's called RUWA, R-U-W-A, RUWA, racial unbridled white aggression, is praise. That's your response, preacher. Pray. See, that's a religious response. If white people's children were getting killed by other races, they would respond religiously, militarily. They'll respond physically. They'll respond violently to make you understand some things. But you don't get them instructions. We don't get them instructions from the church. Let's deal with the economic part of this. 6,700 Black Baptist churches in Mississippi. I did the research. I ain't just shooting no numbers out there. What the Black Bank said. So you know that God want us to give 10%, but God don't want us to have no bank? See, when you bring logic to this, It ain't even a debate. So God want our money, but we can't have banks like these other people. We can't have functions. God don't want Black people in business. He just want us to consume everything from everybody and work for everybody. That's what God want for us. See, you ask preachers them questions. Ask them questions. So God's religious instruction for people killing our children is pray for them. Did God tell us to do that? Or the white man instructing that? Love your enemy. In the world, an animal in the world that actually loves his enemy. So it can be argued that we don't have the aptitude of an animal. Thinking like that. Thinking like that. 6,700 Black Baptist churches in Mississippi. And I just met a family in the middle of the street yesterday. Poe is all out though that had a wreck on 51 Highway. And my spirit, the God in me, ain't no God in the sky told me nothing. The God in me made me park my car, get out, and walk to the children that fell out of their vehicle that were wrecked. Baby hollering to the top of her lungs. Old black lady been hit so hard to knock her wig around. Doing nothing but crying. Baby's crying. I looked at the little baby girl, and I stretched my arms out to her. And I said, come here, baby. White police officer all around. They looked at me. You know what they said? How you doing, Mr. Alexander? You damn right, Mr. Alexander. Mr. Alexander, get out of my way. Come here, baby. Because y'all don't care nothing about our humanity. You don't care nothing about our humanity. I picked that baby up. And immediately, as she felt my love, she stopped crying. I told her, I said, it's going to be all right. And I was looking around to see what else was going on. I looked and I seen, still in the vehicle, on the passenger side of the Astro van that wrecked with a gas in the center of his forehead where you could see the white meat in his forehead. And his mother was there who had wrecked the car. She was there. And she was telling him, JL, don't go to sleep. Don't fall asleep. So with the baby in my arms, I walked over to JL and I put my hand on his head. I said, JL, I said, you all right? He looked back at me, said his mama, like he needed permission to speak. And his mom was kind of slow. She looked at me like, who the hell are you? This is the psychosis that we have as black people. But you think these white people out here your friend? You think these boys in blue is your friend? Talk to me with some love, sister. I'm here to help you. This baby in my arm got to be a relation to you. To JL, don't go to sleep. I said, you all right? He looked around. He said, yes. Yes, sir. I'm all right. I said, you're going to be okay. I said, you're going to be okay. You stay up now. Don't you fall asleep, okay? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I said, all right. I turn around, and I look at these white folks. That was more concerned with the glass laying in the street than they were. I said, where the ambulance? Where the ambulance at? We got five police cars out here. Where is the ambulance? They looked around, had anybody called ambulance? So y'all don't know. You got babies with gases in their head. And ain't nobody called an ambulance? You first respond. You the same one that when somebody say Black Lives Matter, you say Blue Lives Matter. You them motherfuckers. I wanted to have this conversation tonight. Because we want to talk about where God resides for real. Because, see, those children had an encounter with God. And I stayed out there for the duration of that time, till my arm went numb, holding this baby so tight in my arm, because I wouldn't let her go. And she whispered in my ear, I want my granny. I said, she says she want her granny. The old lady out there, I'm thinking, was her granny. She said, listen, her granny is dead. I said, wow. I said, where's her mother? She said, her mother's in Crowder, Mississippi. We can't contact her. I know about Crowder, Mississippi. Very impoverished place. And these children were very impoverished. But I would not leave them in the hands of these white people, these so-called first responders. So the next response unit to pull up was not the ambulance. It was the fire truck. Every one of them got off the fire truck knew me. But one little white lady that operated a business right down from mine, she knew me for real. She knew who I am because I had many conversations with her and told her that I am a black person. I'm a liberator. I'm the liberator. I'm the one to tell you the truth about your society and your people and what my job is to do for my people. She knew that. So she knew them children was in good hands, and she asked me, she said, Patrick, what can we do? I said, first of all, you need to get a goddamn ambulance out here. She said, where's the ambulance? I said, it ain't out here. There's been no two ambulances on the scene. But the ambulance directors or whoever, whatever you call them, the paramedic that were on the scene was totally insensitive to the situation as it pertained to the children. All the grown people going to Baptist DeSoto, all the children going in this ambulance to La Bonne. I said, wait a minute. I said, wait a minute. No, 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 no. So you going to separate the children from the parents? That's what white people do. Y'all hear me? Let me make this connection. Donald Trump at the border. Families get caught at the border trying to cross over illegally. Detain them. Oh, because what you going to do with their children? Hope y'all feeling me. All white people ain't bad. Oh, really? I'm talking about a system of how they function, how they see black people in their society. Children were not priority out there. They were subjects and objects. They didn't have a humanity to these beasts. They called themselves professionals. But they weren't going to have their way. They weren't going to have their way. Not with me. I said, wait a minute. And this black lady didn't understand. Fearful of white people. I could see that in her. Didn't want no friction with these white people. I said, told the white girl, I said, no, 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 no. I said, they're not going in separate ambulance. This woman is going with her children. You understand that? Do you understand that? You going to separate them? That's not going to happen. It wasn't her. It wasn't the white girl that refuted me. Guess who it was that refuted me? It was the old black lady. Baby, 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 don't worry about it. Just let them go on. Don't cause no problem. It ain't causing problems. See this sickness? Turn out all right. I just wanted to say that. I just wanted to say that. Because we have to get to a point where we understand truly where God is. And we got about 7 minutes. And I want to finish strong. We got to understand that the church and its function, do away with it, or we fix it where it serves black people. We have to have a generation of leaders that's ready to change the concept of how we view God. I think my brother Anthony Browder that said, he who controls you, but controls your children. I'll say it again. He who controls your concept of God not only control you, but control your children. The first thing white man did was change your concept of God. Going back to our great teacher, Carter G. Woodson, he said that the fundamental problem with the Negro is that his primary religious and educational instruction comes from his oppressor. He who controls your concept of God controls you and your children. At what point are we going to become bold enough to change that concept? What generation will we stop in a way that's conducive for producing the humanity that we once had? What is your concept of God? To be that you have given life to, that resides somewhere in the sky? I just saw them watch Steve Bezos or whatever this rich cracker is go 62 miles above the earth. Aircraft that he built, or his company built, 62 miles above the earth. What y'all say heaven at? Go ahead and say it. Don't be scared. Say it in your mind so you can deal with it in your sleep. Elijah Muhammad said that the brain is designed to think right. So I like dropping facts, because even if you don't believe it, the fact's still real, and your brain is designed to think right. So in your sleep, you're going to deal with what I'm saying. I said, where you say heaven at? You said heaven is in the sky. Where is the sky? Where is the atmosphere that's above our head? Okay, at what point do the sky end? What point do the sky end? See, in your imagination, there ain't no end to the sky. You can't tell white people that. They got the power to explore shit that you won't even think about. You won't even think about going to the moon. Got these conscious niggas sitting around here talking about the white man ain't been to the moon. Why he have? Tell me why he have. Ain't nothing but mathematical equations and will and determination and not being restricted by some religious constraint that suggests that you can't do that. The white man don't operate like that. The white man see a star in the sky, he said, fuck it, let's go. You set your diffident ass, and we set our diffident ass around here and let him dominate everything. You won't even raise a brave child. So Steve Bezos flew 62 miles into the air, Brother Maurice, into the sky, past the sky. Because after you pass the sky, where you at? Space. You in space. That ain't the sky, that's space. Sky is the atmosphere that you think heaven is. He done flew past your heaven. I'm just dealing with the real. I ain't talking about your belief. Keep on believing what you believe. But if you around me, you're going to hear some real shit, because God ain't there. You've been taught to believe that, while he put an imagery of him in your face that resembles him. So whenever he do shit, it's just like God. You don't supposed to do it, because that's what God do. So Steve Bezos fly straight out through heaven, didn't meet God, didn't meet your God. Well, that ain't heaven I'm talking about. Well, what heaven you talking about? Your imagination? Oh, you going to devise the will to build your heaven like the white man did. And you going to devise the will, determination, to build your heaven and the God in you. Just like Elijah Muhammad was telling us, and he was right and exact. He said, the black man is God. That includes the black woman. Let's not start that debate. Please. Shit, the black woman God before the black man is, if you ask me. But I know one damn thing ain't God. That's white folks. in their imagery. Malcolm X said that white people need to get on their knees and pray to whatever God that they deem necessary. Look what he said. He's talking about a wise, the wise prince, my spiritual father, said white folks need to get on their knees and pray to whatever God that they deem necessary, that black people don't get up tomorrow and do what they supposed to do. What is that? See? I ain't scared to go there. How many more minutes I got? It's almost over with. Is we over with, Brother Maurice? Peace and blessings. Is it over with? If anybody,
we got 4 minutes.
We got what? All right.
4 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Maurice. I'm going to let you close it out,
yes,
but I'm going to say this. Malcolm X said that white people need to get on their knees and pray to whatever God that they deem necessary, that black people don't get up tomorrow and do what they supposed to do. I'm talking about naturally. So I divide this. And I'm done. Reflecting again on the great teacher, Carter G. Wilson. Carter G. Wilson said that your educational instruction and your religious instruction is prescribed to you by your oppressor. That made me deduce this, that if you didn't have the white man education, then his system would not work if you weren't educated by the white man. But guess what? If you didn't have the white man religion, you wake up tomorrow and kill him. Mm-hmm. Thank y'all for listening to me tonight. I greet y'all. Peace and blessings. Brother Maurice, you got it from here.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother Commander. Peace and blessings. And that is so right. That is so right. They better pray we don't wake up because we will kill them. Excellent teaching tonight. As we always say, you kill the nigga in you, I'm going to kill the nigga in me, and our God will reign supreme. We are Black First today,
yes,
tomorrow,
sir,
and forever. Love you, family. Peace,
yes,
and
sir,
blessings. Assalamu alaikum. Shalom.
And right here in 1 John chapter 1, the B section of verse 7, it said, the blood of Jesus, God's only Son, cleanses us from all of our sins.
Stop looking and get yours. I said you better stop looking and get yours. Turn on, shine.
Somebody say, I might as well shout, because God has already given me the city. Shout!